Former Wisconsin Senator Herb Kohl announced the sale of the Milwaukee Bucks pro basketball franchise to two hedge fund billionaires this afternoon. The proposed sale comes as the Bucks finish their season tonight with the NBA's worst record.
Fans looking for a bright spot for the Bucks during the last 9 months have focused some of their attention on a young forward from Greece. Chuck Kornbach has that story.
Formal practice is over at the Bucks training site in suburban Milwaukee, but 6'10" forward Giannis Antetokounmpo is still on the court, working on his shooting, with Bucks assistant coach Josh Oppenheimer. The 19-year-old Antetokounmpo calls out as he and the coach launch three-pointers. That playfulness seems to be part of Antetokounmpo's personality. The Athens-born son of Nigerian immigrants has been in the U.S. less than a year. The Bucks made him their first-round draft choice last June, but he's been getting acclimated, and Antetokounmpo is hip enough about American ways to kid about his favorite foods.
Like burgers, McDonald's, Wendy's, KFC, all that. No, I'm joking. Yeah, just rice, chicken, you know, pastas.
His parents arrived from Greece a couple months ago to cook him more meals. Before that, Antetokounmpo made a few visits to Milwaukee restaurant Ma Fisher's. Second-generation Greeks own the diner, and Greece native Spilios Kalogriopoulos is the second-shift manager. Kalogriopoulos says the local Greek community of about 10,000 is very proud of Antetokounmpo. He says when he attends Bucks games, he often gives him a special cheer.
For example, if I am, you know, I am in the stands, and then he has the ball, and then I try to say, "Let's go, Giannis," or "Pame Giannis," do something in Greek.
There are other Greek players in the NBA, like Nick Kalathis and Kosta Koufos, but Kalogriopoulos says Antetokounmpo has the most promise. At the Bradley Center in Milwaukee, it can take some doing for fans to stay awake through the Bucks' many losses. But if you talk to boosters wearing Antetokounmpo jerseys, like Melissa Brown, their faces light up.
Well, number 34, Antetokounmpo. I can spell that as well, Antetokounmpo. But he's my favorite player. I love him. I think he's really going to go somewhere one day, and that's the jersey I wanted.
Antetokounmpo did play in the Rising Stars Challenge for rookies and sophomores at this year's NBA All-Star Weekend. Bucks coach Larry Drew says his young player has made a nice transition from playing in a second-tier league in Greece to the much more challenging NBA. But Drew does worry a little about all the hype.
He's been getting a lot of, you know, national attention, and the last thing you want is for him to get complacent. He's got to continue just to keep working his behind off and get better and better, because that is the only way he's going to get to that next level.
Drew says that next level is total consistency. Antetokounmpo says he's willing to work hard to improve, even for one of the NBA's worst teams.
It's a little bit hard, but what can we do? You know, we're just going to play hard. We're not going to give up. We're not going to give up yet, you know. We're going to play to the last game and finish strong.
The same day Antetokounmpo stayed late at practice, working on his three-pointers, he hit one late in a game against Orlando. It helped seal one of the Bucks' rare victories this year and earned a call from the PA announcer that the Bucks' hope is often repeated.
The Greek Freak for three!
I'm Chuck Kornbach in Milwaukee.
The debate over whether God exists has raged on for centuries, sometimes taking center stage in the public sphere, thanks to well-known atheists like Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins.
But according to our next guest, Hitchens and Dawkins have actually misused science and mathematical concepts as they try to make the case that there is no God. In fact, he says science has yet to prove that there isn't a God.
Amir Axel joins us. He's a mathematician and research fellow in the history of science at Boston University. His new book is Why Science Does Not Disprove God. Amir, welcome to Central Time.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Sure. Well, why did you feel compelled to take on this subject in a book? It's a hefty subject, I must say.
Well, two reasons, one of them objective and one personal. So first, the objective reason. I was up late one night and surfing the net. I was feeling a little sick, and I noticed that there's a new book 2 years ago by Lawrence Krauss saying that the universe came out of nothing, called The Universe from Nothing. And I've worked writing books about physics and mathematics for 20 years, and I knew from what I knew about physics, I also have degrees in that area, that it just isn't true. The universe doesn't come out of nothing. In fact, nothingness is really empty space, and empty space is immediately filled with forces and energy which can create particles through a mechanism discovered by Paul Dirac in 1928. And so you can't have a universe out of nothing. And it picked me. I bought the book and I filled it with notations throughout. Everything didn't agree with what I knew. And then I was also at a conference in Mexico where Richard Dawkins was speaking. I was there with my daughter, and who was a young science student. She asked him an innocuous question, and he said, "You can believe in unicorns if you like," and walked away. And I thought, I should put that in a book too. So that's why I wrote the book.
Now, when you write it, though, are you trying to put forth any sort of religious perspective on your part?
That's a really good question and a tough one for me to answer, because I'm not a religious person. I find fault in the three major Western religions, at least. Not much that is supported by religion we see in everyday life. We certainly don't see a personal God. Statistically, we don't see God intervening in our lives, at least not often. So the God that I'm trying to defend in this book is the really Einstein's God, the God of nature, the God that created the laws of nature, the God that created the universe. And that doesn't have to be, it can be the God of any particular religion if you believe in one, or it can be a more abstract God. So that's really the way I view it.
Well, you say that in their quest to use science as a means of disproving the existence of God, people like Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens have actually misused science. Flesh that out a bit. How are they misusing science?
Well, there are several ways in which they do it. Richard Dawkins was the first. His book in 2006, The God Delusion, was the one that really started this whole debate. And if you go back, science won very big victories against religion in the 19th century. So you have evolution coming out in 1859, Darwin's theory. There are discoveries of Neanderthal bones all over Europe. There's Foucault's proof that the Earth rotates, which is the church really didn't believe that because of taking the scripture literally, the sun rises and so on. So all these were discoveries were and the young Earth theory, of course. Geology proved in the 19th century that the Earth is much, much older than a few thousand years. Now we know it's 4.5 billion years. So these are all victories of science against religion in the 19th century. But what people like Dawkins try to do is to stretch it further and to say that science in the 20th and the 21st centuries actually proves that there is no God. Now, there are holes in the theory, and Dawkins calls them the gaps, and calls the God of the gaps as something. If we don't understand something and there's a gap, it doesn't mean that God exists because of that. And it's a fair argument, but you could look at it another way and say that just because evolution starts somewhere and continues, and we know that we are the continuation through evolution of earlier hominids and so on, that doesn't mean that life originally emerged without some kind of a divine intervention. So there are holes in Dawkins' argument right away. Dawkins and other biologists can't prove that cells of living things emerged out of nothingness, from inanimate objects. That is something they can't prove. And what Dawkins tried to do in the last few years, and I've heard him talk about it at conferences where I spoke as well, is that the universe as a whole came out of nothing. And that's where Lawrence Krauss comes in, too, another cosmologist. The idea that God is unnecessary for the creation of the universe. And that's where most of the flaws in the arguments of these atheists lie. The universe does not rise out of nothing. The laws of physics, if nothing else, really have to come out of somewhere. And what pre-exists the universe, something called quantum foam, has to come from somewhere too. So it's really very wrong to say that the universe and life came about all by themselves. There's absolutely no scientific evidence for any of that.
And it sounds like you might be saying that Dawkins and others are inconsistently using the scientific process or not applying it equally against certain theories.
Absolutely. They're misapplying statistics, for one thing, and I get into it in the book to some detail, actually. And they are misapplying the scientific method altogether. I've written books about the Large Hadron Collider in Switzerland, for example, at CERN, and physicists there needed a statistical evidence to an unbelievable level of 5 or 6 sigma, which means the probability that any conclusion they come up with is wrong is 1 in 100 million or even smaller than that. So you really need strong proof when you're trying to make statistical and scientific conclusions. And these scientific atheists, so to speak, haven't come up with any such measures of error.
We're talking with Amir Excel. He is a research fellow at the History of Science in Boston University. His new book is Why Science Does Not Disprove God.
And we invite you to join the conversation. Has the public debate over the existence of God been off base? Do believers and non-believers alike need to be more skeptical of their own point of view? You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. We're talking with science historian Amir Excel. He's the author of the book, Why Science Does Not Disprove God.
And we want to hear from you. In your opinion, has science sufficiently proven or disproven the existence of God? Are you a scientist who believes in God? We'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. You can also leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page. Let's take a call from John in Appleton. Hi, John.
Hi, I was just calling. I wanted to know what the guest thinks about Russell's teapot, which basically states that the belief in God should be proven by the person making the claim, not the people attempting to address that claim.
Amir, are you familiar with that?
Well, that's a good question. He was a great philosopher. And the question of the burden of proof, and obviously is the glass half empty or half full? I mean, it's that kind of a question. So, sure, you could say, prove to me that God exists, and I certainly won't be able to do it. And maybe God is a matter of belief, but where I come in to this argument is by looking at the laws of nature and seeing that they're so complicated and intricate. You need many pages of very heavy mathematics to just describe the electron or to describe the Higgs mechanism that brought us the universe. The whole idea of how the universe came about with a fraction of a second after the Big Bang, the Higgs mechanism taking over and creating mass, and then there's this quark soup that just swirls around, and it has up and down quarks, and they all fall together in just the right way to create protons and neutrons with all their masses and their charges working out perfectly. This is called, in science, the fine-tuning argument. And our universe is so fine-tuned for life that Roger Penrose, a well-known scientist and mathematician in the UK, computed the probability of a universe arising, the universe we have, a universe that supports life, arising out of just by chance, as based on one parameter only, as 1/10^10^123. It's an immensely small number, and that's based on only one parameter. And then you think about the fact that if the dark energy that permeates space had been a tiny bit smaller or a tiny bit larger than what it is, the universe would have either collapsed on itself before life had the chance, before galaxies would have had the chance to arise, or blown up before that would have happened. So there's so many parameters. They're all fine-tuned to life. So to me, it says that there's something there. So do I have to prove the existence of God? I don't think I can, but I can say that I'm awed by what science teaches me, and I'm led to the belief that there is something there that we really don't understand, and we don't have, our science is not that advanced yet that we can claim perfect knowledge and through it maybe mastery of the universe.
Thanks for that call, John. Let's move over to Prairie du Chien. Joe is on the line. Joe, what's your comment?
Yeah, when I was in college taking calculus, I failed miserably the first semester because I was applying algebra to it. And once I had, the best way to describe it, I had faith in the derivative. I did much better. And I think God is as we call it, is best expressed in mathematics because it seems to be have continuity across all regions of space. And I think that we also run into a stumbling block about trying to define God because if he did create the universe, he's outside what we perceive. And it's the same thing as living in a home your entire life, never going outside and trying to determine what color it's been painted.
I'm with you completely in that. In fact, I have two chapters in the book about mathematics, and if you go the math way, it looks very different. The reason is that, of course, there are Gödel's proofs that you can't, any system has unknowable parts in it. You have to go outside the system to understand it. There are qualities of numbers that we can't grasp, prove, or disprove because we're within that system. Georg Cantor, who was the first mathematician to understand infinity, was a deeply religious man, and he brought us the first understanding of what the infinite really means. And infinity is obviously beyond us. So in a way, mathematicians, many of them tend to be religious, although they would probably cringe hearing me say that. But most mathematicians are Platonic in the sense that they believe that numbers and mathematical entities such as a perfect square or a perfect circle exist all on their own, regardless of the universe. And that belief is a belief in something that's higher and abstract and pre-exist the universe. So while it may not be a religion, it is a kind of a belief in the existence of things that go beyond us. And so mathematics is certainly the way to see the universe in a very different way.
That was a great question, Joe. We have Zeba on the line in West Dallas. Zeba, what's your question?
Hi. Well, first of all, I'm calling in as a defender of Richard Dawkins. In the beginning of the gentleman's statement, he made some comments about Richard Dawkins that is not true. Richard Dawkins has always stated firmly that he has no proof whatsoever. He cannot prove that God does not exist. So asserting that he said that is blatantly false. So it throws into suspicion every single thing he said afterwards.
I don't know if you made that out, Amir, but she's saying that Richard Dawkins has said that science doesn't have all the answers and there is no proof that God does not exist either.
Well, in all his talks, he speaks very strongly against religion, but although it is true that he hedges sometimes. In his book, he rated himself a 6 on a scale from 1 to 7 of belief versus disbelief, so he doesn't believe completely that God doesn't exist. He's only a 6 on a scale of 1 to 7. And I actually asked him about it when I met him at a conference. I asked him why he paid to place ads on buses in London saying God probably doesn't exist, so just enjoy your life. And he told me that he thought it would be funny. So, you know, again, the word, I asked him why probably rather than completely. So, yes, the answer is he doesn't. I read his book very carefully, and, you know, the picture that comes out is that he doesn't believe in God, and he would like you, not the reader, not to believe in God. Whether he hedges or hides behind a probability or makes similar arguments, that's a different story. But he does. He certainly is a non-believer, and his book is aimed at that, you know, to tell people that.
The debate over whether or not God exists has been going on for centuries. And given that we can't know exactly what God is or how he or it would manifest him or itself in the universe, do you think we'll ever find the answer to that question, or will we still be having this debate a century from now?
Well, that's the very big question. What I think is that if someday we make contact with another civilization, while we may not know whether God exists or not, we'll learn about what other creatures came to in terms of, arrived at in terms of their beliefs, and maybe that would help solve part of the problem. On our own, it would be difficult. The problem is that we can't go beyond the Big Bang. So we can't really, as the caller mentioned, mathematics, we can't go outside our system or outside this house that is our universe. I don't think that signals from other universes can reach us or from before the universe was spawned. We can go back to a fraction of a second after the Big Bang, which is incredible. Mm-hmm. But we can't go behind the Big Bang to see what existed before that. So unless God makes an appearance, we probably would never solve this. Conundrum.
Well, one question I want to ask you in our last minute here is, many people hold very deep personal beliefs about the existence of God, and yet somehow we failed to manage to have civil conversations about it, though I think we were successful today. What advice do you have for people who want to forge a sensible dialogue about this topic?
I think a dialogue, the time has come for it, for a dialogue, and when I see comments on about my book, I realize that this is a conversation that we should be having. So I'm glad that I managed in part to reopen that discussion. Science has progressed tremendously over the 20th and 21st centuries, and it is the time to talk about these things.
Amir, thank you so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That was Amir XL. He is author of Why Science Does Not Disprove God.